Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about anomalies, legends, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined, as always, by my pal, Mark Matzke.
That's me. What is up?
No. Hey, not much. Long time, no talk.
No.
I hate to do this right now, but this is actually a really cool question. Michael Field asked if there's any connection to these stories and creatures to local music. I can cut this later in the episode or something because people tuning in are like, what are these guys talking about? Yeah. Someone dropped that question in the chat. Are you aware of any? So I don't have to edit, what we're talking about this month is West Virginia folklore and monsters. And we're recording these last two episodes live on Facebook. So you're listening to a episode recorded live for a audience, and people are dropping occasional questions in the chat. And so are you aware of that, Mark? There's got to be like a song about the Ogwa, right? Or
oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, the short answer to that is there's absolutely a connection. Mm-hmm. You know, there's what this caused me to think of, even though it's not the same exact region, is, you know, after researching mystery lights and spook lights, I ran across a bluegrass version of a song called the Brown Mountain Lights. And evidently it's very popular.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what it's about, what you think it's about.
Yep.
And so most definitely in greater Appalachia and West Virginia in particular, you know, you have the mountain troubadours, the bluegrass musicians, so much of that song is storytelling, mm-hmm. you know, in a verse sort of form. So a lot of these stories, the way that they're transmitted and passed on is in a song form. So a lot of that, you know, the folk musicians are simply keeping those stories alive through a musical form. But, you know, specifically, that's a great question and a great area of research that I haven't done specifically, but now I really want to. That's, mm-hmm. that's a great idea.
I'm trying to figure out how I do this. I was going to share, because we have, you know, we have ways we can share music and stuff on here, on this, mm-hmm. Do that, but I'm not seeing it. So yeah, I don't know. I was going to play that Brown Mountain Lights song. It was great. When I was editing the, the Brown Mountain Lights episode, I actually wanted to have that song play. Mm-hmm. The other one that people don't know about or are aware it exists is this great song about the Bell Witch, which I also would love to play on this episode.
Oh, but yeah.
We can't figure out how to easily screen share without looking like an idiot sitting here.
Right.
But there is a...
What genre of music is
so
that?
So it's like from one of those really corny, you know, like what you would... what are they called? At Halloween time, you'll have these like cornball albums, especially in the old days, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like these
okay.
themed silly songs,
right?
And that was one of the themed, you know, silly songs. It was great. Just realized this. Okay, there we go.
I mean, there's a Boggy Creek Monster song like that too, mm-hmm. a 45
yeah.
single. I've never heard it. I don't think I've heard it, but same general principle.
There we go. Were people forced to just watch me? Or was that in a split screen? I hope they weren't just watching me for the last like 45 minutes, or I feel terrible. So this week we're finally going to talk about Bigfoot in the state of West Virginia. And this is something we've been talking about doing and then just hadn't managed to do it because we kept getting pulled down other trails. So, aha, I found it. It's not going to, oh, yes, it will. Stall system. Oh, I can't do it. Okay. Well, never mind. Sorry. I was going to go ahead and share that song, but.
Oh.
This is why we don't do live. I get distracted really easily. So, yeah, this week we're talking about West Virginia Bigfoot and something that I have not gotten too deeply into, but that Susan Shepherd mentions in the beginning of this episode that I found especially interesting is that she talks about the origins of boogers, devils, and let me see if I can find it real quick, because I thought it was really fascinating. Right here, Africans and Guineas added devils, boogers, and spooks. It's wow. Talking about the origin of all these different folklore. So it's talking about through the early German, Pennsylvania, Dutch came the poltergeist, doppelgangers, hexing, and hexens. Africans and Guineas added devils, boogers, and spooks. Meanwhile, the Black Dutch brought the concept of the crossroads as a place of spiritual danger. They combined Rom, Gypsy, Pennsylvania Dutch powwow magic with beliefs in ghosts and graveyard ghouls who had masqueraded earlier in Eastern Europe as vampires. But the part that stuck out to me was Africans and Guineas added devils, boogers, and spooks. And I realized, like, I've never heard Bigfoot connected to Africa or... So, like, are those just other words for, like, something completely different? I'm going to have to do some more research into that mm-hmm. because I thought that was yeah. very... And I'm sure she talks about it later in this book. But I don't
what
even...
What time period is that from? I mean, she didn't say. Africans.
Doesn't say right there. I mean, I would assume the very early days of the settling of West Virginia, right?
Okay. Yeah, the reason I ask is because what it makes me think of is, you know, how that transition in the early newspaper accounts of wild man into gorilla. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how that would, and if that factors in
yeah.
at all.
I don't know, but Laura says she's Pennsylvania Dutch. Laura, in the chat is Pennsylvania Dutch. So, and I've got some Dutch roots. My grandpa. My grandpa Schrock came from a Schrock as Dutch as it gets. I mean, mm-hmm. he used to speak that Dutch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for fun. So I've got Amish roots, weirdly enough. My grandpa left the Amish religion when he was younger, but he always stayed in touch with people. And recently, we went and found a Pennsylvania Dutch graveyard near Hartville, where my great grandpa's buried.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So anyway, Bigfoot in West Virginia. Where do we want to start here? Yeah. I know where I want to start. You mentioned, can I start with a question for you while I'm thinking of it?
Okay, sure.
You mentioned the white monsters or whatever from West Virginia. Is there a large number of reports of white Bigfoots from West Virginia? Because we know Pennsylvania has a history of those. And then obviously here in Ohio, we've got a few, most notably the Coshocton 11 foot, right? 11 foot tall. It's like 11 foot officer, the sheriff saw.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. What about West Virginia?
Big boy.
Yeah.
West Virginia, as far as I can tell, it's very limited, but there are a handful. There's some, but I wouldn't say that there's a preponderance of them. And okay. Having said that, I mean, a book that we touched on in the last episode was all about a variety of white monsters, mm-hmm. One of which appeared to be bear-like, but when he wanted to get out fast, he would hop on two legs and run. So mm-hmm. You know, the real Bigfoot fan would say, well, that was just a Bigfoot, yep. you know, escaping, and as they often do. So, yeah, I mean, there is, but I think as far as not nearly to the degree that West Virginia or even Ohio would have white creatures, which is interesting because it seems like that is a folkloric theme in West Virginia in general, mm-hmm. is the white symbolizing, in this case, a supernatural element, you know, like the paleness of a dead being is what's implied by the white color. One thing I think maybe we should mention is just a general overview of the geography mm-hmm. of West Virginia. And you touched on that a little bit last time, but I think it bears repeating. The general overall way that West Virginia unfolds helps to explain where a lot of these reports come from, which is to say that, you know, when you start in probably the upper northwestern corner of West Virginia, it's rolling and it's hilly, but it's not mountainous mm-hmm. by any stretch of the imagination. But the further east you go, it does become rather mountainous.
Yeah.
To the point where you're talking, you know, the highest point in West Virginia is called Spruce Knob, and that's 5,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So what was interesting, I thought, is, you know, where the West Virginia bills itself as the mountain state, and that could be because the mean elevation of the state is 1,500 feet, which is the highest mean elevation of any state east of the Mississippi River.
Hmm.
So I thought that was interesting. And the further south and east you go,
yes.
the more mountainous it becomes. And it's probably no surprise that it's out of that area that the majority of the Bigfoot reports emerge.
Right.
Elevation makes a huge difference in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a huge amount of precipitation. Once you get to about 4,000 feet, it's not unusual to get 200 inches of snow in the winter.
Yeah,
and lots of rain in the summer.
The area around White Sulphur Springs especially feels more mountainous than other. I mean, maybe that was what I was trying to say, is it doesn't feel mountainous. I think the reason is there's hills everywhere you go. So even if you are in the mountains, there's hills nearby. It doesn't have that, like, you know how with like the Shenandoah Mountains, there's these really flat sections near Shenandoah where you're it's flat farmland. Then all of a sudden these, you know, or Montana has that same thing. And that's kind of like what you think of. And that's not the case in West Virginia. There's never a point where it's just like flat land and then boom, there's mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's always something else in the foreground that kind of adding or taking away from the sense of scale, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a bunch of stuff I want to talk about, but it's kind of it relates back to other stories we've talked about. And the first thing I want to find, there's one of these stories that is not related. Three of these are related, and then one of them is not related. So I'm trying to find the one that doubles back to something we talked about a couple episodes. This is Braxton. Oh, I just gave it away. There's Braxton. There's Braxton. This might be it. Nope, they're all Braxton. Shoot. So there were sightings. Okay, both the things I want to talk about relate to monsters being rebranded.
Okay.
And then I've got a couple like more modern day articles, but these are two historical cases. One is the Grafton Monster. So I came to find that there were sightings following the. And I think I talked about this a little bit in the Grafton episode, but the Grafton Monster was rebranded at some point when people started seeing Bigfoot near Grafton, West Virginia, and the newspapers just picked those up and started running stories with headlines this isn't exact because I don't have the stories in front of me, but they roughly translated to like the Grafton Monster's back. You know, like stuff like that. And it would be about this Bigfoot sighting that had really nothing to do with the original Grafton Monster story.
Right.
And I don't have the articles in front of me, which bothers me because they were pretty specific. But the other I wanted to talk about is something I think I've mentioned on this show before, but in the 60s and 70s, there were a flurry of sightings of what was called the Braxton County Monster. So I wanted to go back and find these stories so I could read them to people, because the headlines alone are really kind of comical. And I, unfortunately, because I sent these to myself on the phone, I don't have the dates. But like this one's called Braxton, Monster Branches Out, New Sightings Reported. And this is from Sutton, West Virginia. And these are early 1970s. I want to say like 1972. I don't think I'm wrong, although I do think there were more sightings in the 80s. Somewhere I have a folder full of newspaper clippings from Braxton County of all kinds of stuff, not just Flatwoods Monster, but Bigfoot sightings. There was some sort of like monster catfish in the lake at in the Sutton Lake. So there's all sorts of like really interesting stuff, UFO reports, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, this article is called "Monster Branches Out: New Sightings Reported." The Braxton County monster is back again, and apparently is branching out. A Clay County man says he saw the thing last week in Webster County, and now a Kanawha County man says he saw it recently in Pocahontas County. Now, how the heck they slap the Braxton County branding on this thing and then just start, like, these sightings aren't even in Braxton County. Yeah. The monster was first sighted September 12th, 1952, by a resident of nearby Flatwoods. That's wrong. By a single resident Flatwoods. However, it has either changed appearance or there's a new one around. W.C. Priestley of Alum Creek, Kanawha County, said he saw the monster, and it was quite a shocking experience because I can't read this word. It stalled his car by raising its hair. He described it as hairy. The 1952 version was not described like that. No one is going to tell Priestley that it was a bear. He says he knows a bear from a monster, and this was a monster. He said he spotted the creature on a backwoods road along the Williams River in Pocahontas County. My car started to hiss and sputter and completely stopped, he said. Then I saw it. To my left, beside the road, stood this monster with long hair pointing straight up toward the sky. Priestley said another approaching car caused the thing to drop his hair, and my car started to run again. But he added the points completely burned out a short time later. Charles Stover, a bakery truck driver, said he recently saw the monster too. He said he rounded a curve and saw the monster. I can't even read that. It looks like Stanking Creed. So I'm pretty sure that's not. Oh, I get it. Standing erect, with hair all over his face and body. It's really hard. Like, some of these newspaper articles are so, like, faded, you can't. So let me grab another one real quick. This relates back to the delivery truck driver. Braxton monster reportedly seen by truck driver. Has the Braxton County monster returned? Mrs. Charles Stover, wife of a 25-year-old bakery truck driver, said Saturday her husband was sure it had, or at least something just like it. Does this make sense to you? I haven't really found another case like this where someone takes a monster report from 20 some years prior and relates it to reports of something completely different, like not even in the same ballpark of like description or anything. They just have you ever seen anything like this with a historical report?
I can't think of any at all. Not to this. No, I mean, because you're right. It's the creatures or the beings or objects being reported are so completely different. Mm-hmm. It just seems like a exercise in using a handy phrase,
yeah,
that's well known to try and tell your new story.
It's bizarre. Mrs. Stover said her husband was returning over a backwoods road between Braxton and Webster counties Friday night in the vicinity of Hickory Flats when he witnessed the strange sight. She said her husband reported that when he rounded a curve, the monster, standing erect with hair all over his face and body, glared at him from the end of the road. He estimated the thing to be 6 feet tall. Stover told his wife he almost hit the object and stopped a few yards down the road and took another look, then roared off. He didn't stop until he came upon a restaurant filling station where he ordered a cup of coffee. But I was so scared and shaking so badly that I spilled it all over me, she quoted her husband. He told his story to people in the restaurant, and the men organized a posse. They went back to the area and found rocks upturned and marks on the ground. Mrs. Stover said she discounted suggestions that her husband had been drinking, and so did his boss. We believe his story, she said. It was just over 8 years ago that Mrs. Kathleen May of Flatwoods reported seeing a mysterious object near her home. She and her sons investigated and reported. And then it goes, okay, so I was wrong about the date then. This says 8 years ago. That's 1952. So this is 1960, which means there is another flap, as I was saying. There's another flap from West Virginia, from Flatwoods later. Trying to see if that might be what this is. There's another article here. Woman unnerved by monster from New Martinsville, West Virginia. Which is a neighboring community. It's doubtful that the Braxton County monster has ventured this far north, but you couldn't prove it by Mrs. Jean something or other of nearby Friendly. She said she came home late Tuesday night and a wild-looking barefoot man was in the house. She said the long-haired man...
In the house.
Yeah. He looked like a monster, grabbed her, but she wrenched free and fled to a neighbor's house. She was so unnerved that she was admitted to a hospital Wednesday for treatment of shock. Monster was not found. There's more to this story. There were yellow footprints found in Braxton County. Police were called out yesterday morning to investigate the tracks, which were reported by several bewildered housewives. The footprints came out of a sewer, proceeded up a hill, and finally disappeared into a field. It is interesting. Braxton County Flatwoods shows up a lot in Bigfoot reports when you're looking for West Virginia, especially if you're doing newspaper archival stuff. And if you look up the Flatwoods Monster by that name, you'll find an equal number of Bigfoot reports where they have redubbed the Flatwoods Monster, or redubbed the Bigfoot into being the Flatwoods Monster, the return of the Flatwoods Monsters. Anyway, Mark, I'll let you talk now because I've rambled for a while.
Well, just a question about the reports that you were, the one that you were referencing, mm-hmm. the one with the creature that had the hair that stood up.
Yeah.
And the guy's car, was that 70s or was that 60s?
See, I have to believe it's 1962 because they were next to each other. They were, it references the other sighting, the delivery truck driver. But it's strange because I thought I had 1970s reports in here. So somewhere on my phone, I think there's more 1970s reports.
Yeah, it's just really interesting because that's starting to get into the real high strangeness category, mm-hmm. you know, where there's electromagnetic stuff happening along with sightings. It just grabs your attention.
Yeah.
All right. So one thing that I think is, you know, undeniably true about West Virginia is that, you know, like a outdoorsman culture is very strong and you have lots of hunters out in those big swaths of wilderness territory, you know, a lot of the time when season is on and maybe even when it's not. So it just stands to reason that a lot of the people who are seeing Bigfoot in West Virginia are hunters. And when you go through reports, especially in the modern era, a lot of the people who are filing reports were either hunting or are well familiar with how to track observation of the outdoors and what creatures look like. So you're getting some pretty high quality and close-up looks at these creatures by and large. And there was one case in particular that I just wanted to share with you because it's got a couple things going for it. One is it's a long observance of the creature. And by long, I mean like anywhere between 5 and 11 minutes consecutively of this thing standing in a field. And it's a father and son story as well. And it took place, this one took place in 1969. It was November. The witness says, I was on my first hunting trip with my Winchester, a 30-odd 30 I had received on my 11th birthday in August. My dad and I were near Marlinton, West Virginia, at a campsite we frequented a lot. I do know the name of the people that owned the land. I will not give it out. It was well past daybreak on a crisp, clear morning. About 7:30 a.m. we headed out. Right at the corner of the fence, Dad made me kneel down, saying that he saw a bear. Dad slowly rises and peers through the scope mounted on his 30-odd 6. After what seemed like a decade to me, about 15 seconds, he kneels back down. I said, did you lose him? And he said, no, it's still there. I said, are you going to shoot him? And he said, no, because he don't know what it is. Now, my daddy taught me about every critter that ran through the woods, and for him to say that he didn't know what it was sent me into shock. He told me to look at it. I always carry field glasses with me when I hunt, still do. I slowly stood up, located the animal, put the glasses to my eyes. I am retired military, and what humans do to humans scares me more than what I saw that morning. It was a very large animal, about 9 foot tall, standing across the hayfield by the other fence post. There is very little hair on the face, and I remember thinking that he looked like the very kind and wise man that my father knew. I was not afraid at all, and at the time thought it was more afraid of us. I looked at that animal for nearly a minute before kneeling back down. It had brown hair with streaks of red, with a dark brown face, very brown eyes, but not without soul. Its hair, not fur, did not seem to be matted or nasty. No, I did not smell anything. After a minute, Dad and I stood back up and the thing was still there. Dad scoped it and I glassed it for about 30 seconds when Dad said, come on, let's head back to camp. Once there, he took my gun and chambered the only round I had in it, then filled the magazine. He loaded a 12-gauge with slugs, then got another gun from the case, loaded it. On a beautiful fall day, he would not let me out. Following morning, a Sunday, you could not hunt till noon. After breakfast, Dad asked what I saw. I told him, and he said, me too. He said, we should keep this to ourselves, and as far as I know, we did. I did share this with my sons after Daddy passed away, saying that it was the only time I saw him, quote-unquote, nervous. So I think there are a couple things about that report that I think are fairly standard, if there is such a thing in a Bigfoot report. First is that the coloration of the creature seems to be a running theme in West Virginia. You asked about white Bigfoot, but in the reports that I looked at, it seems far more typical for it to be that reddish brown that, you know, you would associate probably with an orangutan. Is the color that you see a lot in these reports. The other kind of common feature is, you know, a hunter who is well armed gets a fairly up close or long term look at the creature and for whatever reason decides not to shoot it. Is more scared or just desirous to get out of the area where he's having this sighting. And so there's multiple reports like that. Another one that I thought was really interesting came out of the New River Gorge, which is by that big bridge over the New River, right in that general vicinity. And in fact, a picture that the hunter took, you can see that bridge in the background. There was about a 7-foot tall, very large creature, very close by sighting, about 60 yards in this case. It lasted for about 20 seconds, looked right at the hunter. So it's just interesting to me that in this particular state where you have lots of hunters out in the woods who know what they're doing, are responsible with their weapons, if we were to get a body, it seems like West Virginia would be a place that you would be likely to pull one out of, except that these close-up sightings and what people see, like in the case of the 11-year-old boy, you know, the figure has, it's not just an animal. You know, they get the sense that it's, in his case, he used the phrase, not without soul. Mm-hmm. And that is typically the explanation when a hunter has a creature in his sights and doesn't pull the trigger is, you know, what if it is human or human-ish? Would I be in some sort of trouble at that point if I did pull the trigger? And by the way, Marlinton, where that father and son sighting took place, is about 142 miles east of Charleston.
Okay.
So getting into the more mountain region of the state.
I found an interesting article on theregisterherald.com, which I can't remember. We've been featured in the Register Herald, but I can't remember where that is.
Oh.
I don't know. That might be a Charleston newspaper. But they did an article on Chris Allen, who's apparently a rock musician, once the lead singer for the Marshall Tucker Band and now the head of his new group, Southern Thunder.
Okay.
Apparently a huge Bigfoot believer. Let me look at the date on this. This is from 2009. So the article's over 10 years, about 11 years old. But Alan had a sighting at the age of 8 when Alan, his parents, a sister, and some neighbors spotted a curious creature in a tree in Chelian, not far from his marmot home, and watched it until darkness set in. It was almost as if you went to a zoo and had seen a spider monkey sitting on top of a tree, he recalled. It just stood there. It was a young one, a juvenile, about 6 feet tall. My father suggested someone call a newspaper, but Mom said by the time the newspaper got there, it would be dark. Back then, few people had video cameras. It acted like a monkey would do. I never even thought of it being a Bigfoot at the time. This is a whole article about, you know, Alan searching for Bigfoot, apparently, around the world. He ended up doing it or getting a show of some sort with an Animal Planet talks about where he looked for Bigfoot. I don't know. I've never heard of this guy. No offense to Chris, if you're listening. I've also never heard of the Marshall Tucker Band, so I don't know what that means. But yeah, I thought that was interesting because the spider monkey, I've never heard a spider monkey brought up as an example of like what someone's Bigfoot encounter was like.
That makes me wonder in what sense is it, I mean, why did they choose that language to describe it? If it was
right.
like spindly?
Yeah.
Or did it have that monkey-ish of a face? Or, you know, what was it about it
yeah.
that made them use that language? Because there is, I mean, they're scattered in among all Bigfoot reports, of course, but certainly in West Virginia, there are reports of a skinny Bigfoot running around. And that just makes me wonder, you know, what might they be drawing on with the spider monkey
yeah.
Description?
Oh, yeah. The there's descriptions out of Area X where people have talked about one of the guys compared it to Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. Mm. Mm-hmm. And when it walked, it had that same type of walk with the arms moving yeah. like it was, because Adam and I made fun of this the entire drive. I can't remember who said it, but they referred to it as like bebopping, like when it was walking, like it looked like it was just chilling.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Just to go back to the idea of rebranding, there have been sightings around Point Pleasant, West Virginia, obviously most connected to the Mothman, but there have been sightings in Point Pleasant and around Point Pleasant and even directly in the TNT area, including a sighting of a hair-covered creature during the Mothman flap. It would have been during the summer of 1967. There were, I believe, at least one sighting, but maybe two, and at least one of them was written about by Keel in the Mothman Prophecies. He mentioned sightings of a creature that was hair covered in the TNT area. He might have even had wings, but it was described more like a Bigfoot than the Mothman during that same time period. And to that end, I decided to do a BFRO search, and I did find I found a report that was filed by someone who had found tracks in the TNT area, what appeared to be Bigfoot tracks. So I thought that was interesting, and it seemed to predate sort of the Mothman hysteria even. So I think it could potentially be ruled out as a hoax. I mean, obviously you have no idea, but the fact that it might predate that time period would lead me to believe it might not be a hoax. And then obviously Brandon and I had our little experience in the TNT area, which I think we just talked about recently, right? I don't need to recount that.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know if it was on this show. Crap. Maybe it was on another interview.
Brandon and I heard what sounded like samurai chatter in the TNT area one night. And then whatever it was launched a rock from a hill at least a football field length away from us and managed to hit the only tree in a field. That's the part of the story that always stands out to me. More than likely it was people because there were houses in the general area of whatever this was, but it was still weird. And there's a lot more to the story, but it makes the story so convoluted and ridiculous because of the circumstances surrounding what happened. That it's difficult to tell it without going into this whole thing. But we experienced something there that was interesting. Anyway, West Virginia Bigfoot. I got nothing else. That was that was where my research took me. But I'm sure you have a mini book or something you want to read.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's
47 reports from.
Right. Settle in. No, I mean, there's this really crazy having said all that stuff about hunters, I mean, there's really other crazy reports of, you know, Bigfoot being seen in highly trafficked areas like crossing major highways near truck stops, stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Which just, you know, it just is. I don't know what to make of those because it just seems so unlikely. If you have vast acres of, you know, untouched areas to go to, why would you run alongside, you know, I-64? But like this is a report that was taken 2011. So it's relatively recent near Lewisburg, which is also near a very famous resort called Greenbrier Resort. It's kind of this old, And that's actually near Roanoke, Virginia, sort of this, you know, white country, you know, like white painted fake, false sort of, I don't know, the resort itself, I guess it's trying to be super classy, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say. And right. It doesn't quite reach that level. But anyway,
well, that's an opinion.
Yeah, it's an opinion. An accurate one. Yeah. But nevertheless, 2011, near this resort, while driving from Richmond, Virginia to Charleston, West Virginia, on I-64, I saw what I assumed was a deer run into heavy eastbound traffic. One vehicle had to brake hard to avoid hitting this thing. When it came out between the cars and hit the grassy 70-foot median, it was running like a sprinter runs. I thought, that's not a deer, that's a man. He never slowed down when he got into the westbound lanes and ran right behind a car passing an empty log truck. He almost ran into the rear of the truck as he was crossing the road, so he stopped. At this time, I saw that he was covered from the top of his head to the ground with long, dark brown hair. As soon as the truck passed, he sprinted across the lane and into the woods. The middle of his shoulder was even with the bottom cradle on the log trailer. When I passed this point, my 30-year-old son saw him running up the hill through the woods. So it's just this, you know, bizarre situation where during heavy traffic, you've got this creature just seemingly haphazardly sprinting across traffic. And weirdly, it's not the only report like that that exists in West Virginia, but also, you know, in other places as well. I remember there's a story out of Tom Powell's book, The Local, and this one took place in Oregon where, you know, a Bigfoot runs into traffic and actually runs up the middle so that it's visible by a number. You know, presumably all the cars going past, if they were paying attention, would have seen this thing essentially jogging right in the middle of the road before it finds a hole to run through and make it through traffic onto the other side of the road. So
did you, did you find or notice any like more activity in one particular part of the state than others? Because I do know that that central part of the state is so rural, like there's no one anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious if you noticed maybe like a larger number of reports in one spot than another.
Yeah, I think it's from the central area of the state. And then if you kind of assign it quadrants, it's the center of the state and then the southeast part of the state. And that's where it becomes the most rugged and mountainous. But you also get a greater number of hunters out there, you know, none of them necessarily going after Bigfoot, mm-hmm. but that's the most sparsely populated part of the state. And there are quite a few reports of Bigfoot being sighted in the mountain passes and the higher elevation, which, you know, there's, I suppose that makes some sense if that's the most remote part of the state that mm-hmm. you want to be found. That's where you would be as long as you could physically stand it.
Yeah. West Virginia, Bigfoot. There's a lot more to go to here. We could potentially do another episode on this. I don't know if it'll be the immediate next episode, but I would like to get into other reports than Flatwoods and Point Pleasant and a Register Herald article that I found as we were recording the show. So we'll have to revisit this. The live thing's really fun. I've been enjoying doing all the live stuff we've been doing. It seems like people really enjoy tuning in. So what we might try to do is for a future episode, we might do a live episode that records live and entirely is based, the conversation is based around what people are sending in. That, you know, we could potentially do that in addition to the mailbag episode.
Sure, that'd be fun.
Yeah, so we will actually be recording more episodes. I think we actually have to record episodes next week. Because I've got to run this episode tomorrow, and then I got to run the other episode on Tuesday. So we actually need to record next week to pump out another two. Unless I can put in a call let's just try to get... We'll try to do it. Okay, so anyway, monsteropolismail@gmail.com to send us emails. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes. And check out On the Trail of UFOs on Amazon and Vimeo On Demand. DVD and Blu-ray coming on a much wider scale. Will be available on a much wider scale later this year as well, if all goes to plan. And I think that's it. We'll be back. Stay safe and healthy. Take care of yourselves. And thanks for listening.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com and is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.